Welcome to Behind the Shield. My name is James Gearing, and this is episode 13 of the show. And my guest this week is professional wrestler turned motivational speaker, Mark Miro. Now, Mark is probably best known, aside from his wrestling career, for some of his viral videos that have gone around on the internet, where he's touring high schools and giving presentations about depression, suicide, anti-bullying, that kind of thing. The reason why I really wanted to talk to Mark was twofold. Firstly, we have an issue in our professions, in the police and fire and EMS, and then the associated professions, medical examiner, CSI, you know, whatever you're dealing with, if you're dealing with trauma. He has some great insight into depression, into suicide, what we would call PTSD, all these different areas. And we really delve into that a little bit. The other side, though, is most of us are also husbands and wives and parents. And a lot of us are raising children, our own children, stepchildren, foster children even. And the side of it where we address bullying, whether it's, are you raising a bully? Are you raising a child that's a victim of bullying? How to identify that? I really want to expand more in some of my interviews on the family side, not only specifically pertinent to husband and wives of first responders, but also just in general, being a dad, being a husband, a wife, and how that affects us as human beings as well as first responders. So the interview was a little bit shorter than some of my other episodes. There was a slight miscommunication between us, but also Mark was about to embark on a huge national tour. So again, I am extremely grateful that I got the time that I did with him, but I will definitely hunt him down. He's in Orlando, so we will do a part two to this interview as well. So we start off talking about his early career, his life as a boxer, then a wrestler, and then how he transitioned to the amazing things that he does now in high schools around the country. I, as a dad, was very, very moved by what I saw in the presentations that were online, and I really wanted to bring his knowledge to everyone that listened here. We're not talking about firefighting. We're not talking about being a police officer. This particular episode is more about being a human and the humans that we raise as parents. So I hope you guys enjoy this episode. I really want to touch base with Mark again. It was a very passionate interview, and I also did it face-to-face, my very first face-to-face interview. So I apologize if the sound is a little different. I don't think it's bad, but it's different than the other episodes because we were both using the same mic, which I'd never done before. But that being said, I think it was fantastic, and I hope you guys enjoy. And without further ado, I present to you Mark Miro. Welcome to Behind the Shield. I am James Gearing, and this is Mark Miro. Welcome, Mark.
James, thanks for having me on your show.
No problem. Obviously, you have become familiar to a lot of us that weren't wrestling fans before because of your Mother's Day video that went, I think it's an understatement to say it went viral on the internet. So I want to talk about, you know, all the things leading up to that, but the feature of that is obviously your mother. So can you start by telling us what your childhood was like and where you were raised?
My parents were divorced when I was 8 years old. And my mother took me, my brother, my sister and I to, we moved into the west side of Buffalo, New York, which was one of the worst drug and gang infested neighborhoods. And it was a horrible childhood growing up there. I mean, the gangs and the violence that we witnessed at such a young age was incomprehensible for anyone to see that, you know. And I just remember my mom trying so hard, working two jobs, trying to keep us out of trouble, trying to do the right thing. We were just so poor. We just had no funds to live in a nicer neighborhood or go to nicer schools or anything like that. And we were getting beat up a lot and going through a lot of hard times. I remember there was nights that we didn't have food. And when people say, well, your mother worked two jobs, so they were very minimum jobs, you know. She would even try to make clothes and sell them, you know. And she bought most of our clothes at garage sales or yard sales because we just had no money. which made it even harder going to school when you went to school with hand-me-down clothes that it was just embarrassing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. I lived in a big farmhouse. Everyone thought we were really wealthy, but the money wasn't going to those, so I had secondhand clothes too, you know. And
you know how that feels.
Yeah. In fact, actually, there's a funny story. I used to think Edward Jackson was a brand name, but actually it was a name tag of one of the guys that used to hand it down to us. So I can relate. So, but you moved to Florida after that, is that right?
Well, I mean, moved a few times before. Obviously, Florida came into my life because of I was building swimming pools, and there was a company in Florida called Pacific Pools that I was able to get a job with. So it was an opportunity to move to Florida, and I jumped at the chance to do that. And but it, you know, getting involved in drugs and alcohol and just living a very just a paycheck to paycheck lifestyle, and then dealing drugs to support my habit, and just falling in with the wrong people and getting into a lot of trouble, and then getting involved in dealing drugs and then overdosing. I overdosed on drugs on 3 occasions where I should have been dead, but I just believe I was kept here for a reason.
Yeah. Now, when did you get into the alcohol and drugs? At what age?
Well, it really started when I was younger. It was right before I had my first professional boxing match. And 2 weeks before my first professional boxing match, I was training up to that. And I had my nose shattered in an accident, and I needed reconstructive surgery. And it was in that time off that I just fell with the wrong people and really started, you know, kept saying to myself, I'm coming back in a year, I'm going to be champ of the world. And I kept doing this over and over again and thinking I would be come back. And 1 year became 2, and 2 became 4, and 4 became 10. Next year, next thing I know, I'm a full blown drug addict, you know, and I lost my career in boxing.
Yeah, were you doing pretty well up to that point, though?
Yeah, I mean, I'm very successful in sports, in football, hockey, and of course boxing. You know, I was won the New York State Golden Gloves a few years in a row. I was a gold medal winner in the Empire State Games, and I was a member of the USA boxing team. Did very well in sports. And then I looked at my dream come true of finally being able to buy my mom a house, and all the little things I wrote down as a little boy that I thought would become a reality in my life, you know, becoming rich and famous, were going to happen through boxing. And then, of course, through those, through my bad choices, led to destruction on my life.
Right. Yeah. And was it the pain medication that you kind of spiraled down with, or was it?
No, it was, you know, back then it was, pain medication came later on when I became a wrestler, but, right. but the drug of choice back then was cocaine.
Okay.
Was very prominent.
Yeah. Yeah. That probably wasn't too good for your nose either.
No, no, not at all.
All right. So how did you, transition into wrestling?
Well, I had some friends over my apartment one time, and, my buddy was flipping through the TV channels, and he landed on professional wrestling. And I made the statement, man, I could do that. And my buddies busted out laughing because there was some big guys on television, you know. They said, look at the size of those guys. Those guys will pick you over their head and throw you right out of that ring. I said, no, I'm telling you, I can do that. And one of my other buddies goes, Mark, you're 30 years old. What are you going to do, start a pro career now? And I said, yes. And it was at that time, I found out there was a wrestling school in Tampa, Florida, which was about 60 miles away from where I was living. So I started driving there like after work and on weekends, cleaned up my life and got into professional wrestling. And it was only a year later that I signed my first really big contract with WCW Wrestling as the character Johnny B. Bad. And my life just took off. It was incredible. But then again, falling in line with the wrong people, you know, the party life. Now you're going to traveling all over the world, and every, you know, the bar owners are leaving the bars open all night. There's all kinds of women and drugs and everything that led me into that dark place again. Mm-hmm. And only now I have all the money in the world to buy anything I want. So it was very convenient for me. And again, spiral out of control.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing how, you know, people get to where they dreamed of, only to find that happiness isn't at the top of that, and they're, you know, reaching for the wrong coping mechanism again.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, you have publicly admitted to using steroids in the past,
yes.
Is that correct?
Oh, and, yeah.
I know some of your peers weren't happy about your insight into that, but I think that's very important. I mean, we have yeah, first responders that do. I understand, especially in law enforcement, when you know your life may be at stake and you want to be as strong as you can. But what did you see in the wrestling world as far as the negative effects from your eyes?
Well, I mean, like anything, you know, steroids get you big and strong. But see, with wrestling, it was a lethal cocktail. It wasn't just steroids. It was, you know, the party life, the drinking, the drugs and everything else that went along with it, where your heart just couldn't take it. And steroids alone could kill you. You know, I mean, some people get addicted to it in a sense, maybe not a physical addiction, but looking at themselves, not wanting to see themselves smaller, you know?
Yeah.
And of course, when you're a bigger than life character, I mean, you look at our action figures, we got traps coming from our ears, you know? You live that life of people, and all of a sudden they see you thinner or skinnier or gone. They're like, "What happened to you? Are you sick?" You know, but yeah, it's only because you're not doing the steroids. So it's kind of a, like I said, lethal cocktail in the professional wrestling industry that killed many wrestlers that died from drug overdose.
Yeah. I mean, it's certainly the combination is certainly having its effect on the wrestling world. I'm not well versed in wrestling, but I mean, you just see, you know, over and over again these men dying in their 50s, which really shouldn't be happening. Another area that I've kind of been delving into recently is TBI as well, and you guys had a lot of that, didn't you, from all the hits and boxing,
you know,
well.
It's just becoming so I guess open now, you know, because we're seeing the effects of people that have had concussions or had trauma over the years. And I mean, I remember a match I had. It was at the Omni in Atlanta. I'll never forget it. And I was wrestling a guy. His name was, at the time, he went by the character called Scotty Flamingo. And I got knocked out during the match. And I was supposed to win the match. And, you know, somehow I came back to in the match, which I don't even remember. Mm-hmm. And he basically put me on top of himself to pin him, you know. I couldn't remember anything. And after the match, I don't remember walking to the ring. I don't remember anything. So obviously I had a serious concussion. But I didn't miss the show the next night after that. And it was just not part of, like, concussions were part of the game. I mean, if you got your bell, it's called a bell ringer, you know. Mm-hmm. And but you never would miss a show or something like that. And so I never really knew how many concussions I may have had or other wrestlers had during their careers. But when you think about, we're doing around 250 cities a year, and you times that over, you know, 14 years back and forth in and out of wrestling, how many matches I've had, thousands of matches, and, you know, getting hit over the head with a steel chair. You know, people will say, "Well, wrestling's fake." I'm like, "Oh, those steel chairs are real. I mean, we really hit each other, you know?
Yeah.
You just not want to hurt the guy, so you hit him flat with the chair and don't turn it or something. We're going to, you know, bust him open." But, you know, it's just, I think it's good that it's coming out now that more and more people are getting involved and figuring out more about this and what we can do to curb the head trauma that we're seeing in professional sports, whether it's in football, whether it's building a better helmet. You know, there's always the technology is now catching up to what we need to do to help save these people. And the way they're, you know, they're protecting players from head hits, you know, helmet to helmet hits. And in professional wrestling, I commend WWE that has now a very strict drug testing now. We're not seeing the wrestlers die like they did back when I was in the industry.
Yeah.
So there are steps that have been taken to protect many lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know that's going across all sports. I know in kickboxing, I believe now, and boxing, they're looking to remove the headgear because they realized it was adding weight, you know, to the head when it was getting hit. And I know there's been arguments even for football. When they look at rugby, I think they have a lot less head injuries in rugby because you can't spear, you can't go helmet to helmet.
Right.
You don't have a helmet, you know.
Yes, yeah.
So, I mean, it's interesting, and was taking some of the gear away to make it safer as well. But what we're seeing in our profession that mirrors TBI, I mean, first you have TBI, you have, you know, especially the policeman and the fireman when using the tools and those kind of things, there's impact there. But the sleep deprivation actually mirrors TBI. So again, we're having this ridiculously high increase in suicides and first responders. And I think sleep deprivation is a key, and obviously the PTSD that they're harboring, all these things that they're seeing. But I think the result is the same as the wrestlers, as the football players, that they're ending to a point where, you know, these suicidal thoughts are so strong that they can't resist them anymore. We just lost a fireman in California that leapt over a freeway bridge. I mean, that's not a conscious, calm decision, you know.
So. Yeah.
So, yeah. All right, so before I move on to that, so in the wrestling world, was there a lot of abuse of painkillers as well? Because, I mean, you guys must have got banged up.
Yes, I mean, the thing was is that you wrestled injured, you know. I mean, here's the thing is that on television, there's only, let's say, maybe 25 spots. But if you're not ready to go that night, there's 100,000 guys behind you who would love your spot. So you wrestled injured, you'd wrestled hurt. And what helps you when you're hurt? Obviously, pain medication. And many of my fellow wrestlers got addicted to it, including myself, that made it easy to go to the ring when you're hurting, mm-hmm. not to feel anything, you yeah. know? But little do we know, we're making some of our injuries worse. And of course, the addiction that comes along with pain medication. Mm-hmm. And the, you know, and it's like drugs lead to other drugs too. You know, sometimes when you're doing pain medication, also like you mentioned, the sleep deprivation, that now you need somas or something to sleep on, Ambien or whatever it would be to, mm-hmm. to sleep that night. So it becomes this vicious cycle that you're in. And sometimes when you're drinking on top of that, you forget if you even took your pills. And then you take more pills. And many guys have overdosed because of that.
Yeah.
That didn't realize they already took them, you know, or some gave them to them at the bar. And they took them again later at night thinking I need to go to sleep, but they already took them, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And that's happened quite a bit.
Yeah. The I'm sure most guys out there will relate to this, but I think of the opiate overdoses that I've had, I would say probably only 20% were street drugs. The other 80% were prescribed medications people took. And,
you know, I'm seeing, and because I'm at schools, you know, I'm seeing this happening younger and younger, and it isn't just the kid in the alley. I mean, we're talking about our football players, our cheerleaders. I mean, kids that are responsible students that happen to try it, and the addiction is incredible for opiate abuse that happens. And I've met more parents now that have lost their kids to overdose, and it just breaks your heart because it's a pain that, I mean, with Christmas coming up, that many parents have lost their kids this year alone, you know, or last year, 10 years ago. It's every Christmas, every birthday, every holiday without their loved one that died over taking an overdose. Mm-hmm. And it's not like they want to kill themselves, you know, it's that they just want to get high.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing with the ones that are in pain, there's very little education on how to get out of pain without meds, you know, using the PT and a lot of modalities out there and strength training in the right way to take the pressure off your joints. But sadly, the medication is the quick fix.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, two ways. A lot of times the patient wants it too. Well, you talked about school, so let's get into that. So what got you to transition from wrestling to this incredible program, Champion of Choices, that you have now?
Well, you know, I always believe there's two types of people. There's people that say something needs to be done. And then there's a person that says, I'm going out there and doing something. And I think for many years, I was guilty of saying, why don't they do this about this? Or why don't they do this about that? And you could talk all day long, you know. Your opinion doesn't change the world. You know, your action changes the world. And I decided to go out there and do something about it, to speak about, you know, and it isn't going about blaming someone else. It's about saying, hey, this is me. This is who I was. This is what I did. And I don't want other people to have to go through the same thing I went through. And there's an old saying, you get wisdom from one of three places. You get wisdom from like a mentor, a coach, a teacher, parents. You get wisdom from books and DVDs, or you get wisdom from mistakes. I'm the king, okay? And I'd much rather kids get, or students or people get their from my mistakes than make their own mistakes. Hear my story. Hear what happened to me. Hear how I lost my mother, my father, my brother, my sister. Hear the many wrestling friends, many of the guys that I wrestle against. I think it's over like close to 40 guys I've wrestled against that are no longer on this earth.
Right.
And so I share these stories, and I really see many people that lives have been changed or saved because of our presentations at schools, churches, and corporations around the world.
Right. Yeah. I saw a very moving interview with the mother of Daniel Briggs that you guys have on the site.
And she's Amy is just an amazing friend. And again, she says, I will never get over this. Her son that was only 16 years old took his life last year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she goes around and speaks about it. And from a mother's point of view, you know, many kids that kill themselves, they think no one's going to care. No one's going to miss me. Mm-hmm. You know, they have no idea the trauma and the pain that's left behind after they've taken their life of this lady, Amy, or her husband or her other son. You know, Christmas this year, I can't even imagine. I mean, his book bags the day he took his life are still sitting on the counter. They never moved them. Mm-hmm. They're there, and they may be there forever. I don't know, but they've never even taken them apart. His room's exactly the same as if he's coming home. You know, and my heart just breaks when I meet parents that go through this, and students that just. You know, when they think nobody cares and they don't realize how loved they are, you know, and because it's in the moment. I really believe that most kids took their life, did it in the moment where if they could ever have that moment back, they would take it back in a heartbeat, you know. But it's just a spur of the moment. Another young lady that took her life, you know, she shot herself in the stomach. She waited for her boyfriend to come up because they got in an argument and he pulled up and he shot it. Now, I don't think she tried to kill herself. I think she just wanted to make a statement that I'm really hurting, you know, but she ended up dying.
Yeah.
And, you know, meeting with her parents and seeing that what's left behind there is just horrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's the same place that the suicides are coming from. In, you know, soldiers and first responders is, again, they feel like they can't talk as well. And that's something that we're trying to change. PTSD was a great acronym and a great movement initially, but now it's almost got this connotation of weakness.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't.
I mean, it's sad, yes.
Yeah. If you're a compassionate human being and you've seen suffering and you look in the mirror and can't acknowledge that that's going to have an effect, the same way as, you know, wear and tear on your body. I mean, I was extremely healthy, did yoga, did, you know, CrossFit and all kinds of stuff, and did it the right way. Didn't do, you know, the terrible CrossFit. And then one day I was lifting a patient and my back went. And that's just wear and tear. That was just, you know, some poor movement pattern that I've been doing. And I didn't know. I was completely unaware until it failed. And that's how these guys are, you know, mentally, is they can't reach out. So it's building and building and building. And one day, you know, they're so desperate that they walk to the woods and, you know, carry a gun or whatever it is they do. And I think with the kids, with our sons and daughters, and then with adults as well, we have to be able to talk to each other and let them know that what they're feeling isn't, you know, weakness. It's compassion, it's strength, it's desperation. It's, you know, it's real human emotion.
I could not agree with you more. And I think that's one of the things that we do at our presentations. We get people to open up and talk about it. And that's why we often get hundreds of letters after a presentation from students with a common theme is this changed my life. But we also get students that finally have opened up about something they're feeling or going through that otherwise would not talk about this because it's like a volcano. And sooner or later, that volcano erupts. And many times it erupts in negative behavior, could lead to alcohol, drugs, could lead to horrible relationships with your spouse or your family or your parents. And it could lead to self-harm, burning, cutting yourself, or in worst case, the suicidal thoughts or taking your life. And that's why it's so important. It is not a sign of weakness. I think it's a sign of strength to say, hey, man, I'm going through a really hard time. I need some help. We've all been there before. I'm the first one to admit, man, that there was a time in my life that I wanted to end it all after losing my family and my ex-wife walking out the door and I just felt there was no reason to continue. Like everything, all the years I lived were the best years I already had. Nothing's going to ever be good for me in my life. And I just wanted to end it all. And I'm just so thankful every day. I just am so thankful I didn't end my life. I never would have known all the great things that were coming. You know, a new marriage, new friends, a purpose. Oh my gosh, every day I have a reason to get up in the morning and go and present at a school, a church, a corporation. But I never would have known that. Never would have known all the great things that God had for me in my life. Just like anybody that's listening to this, man, don't ever give up hope. You know, I think hope is so important to have every day, dreaming big, you know, and many times as adults, we feel like, you know, those were the days. No, these are the days, man. These are the days that we could learn from past mistakes. We could learn from maybe failed relationships. We could learn from things in our life that say, hey, let's do something a little different, you know, and rekindle a relationship with an old family member we haven't talked to, you know, start a business, write a book, do something that's, oh, you've always dreamed about doing, but those weren't the days. The rest of your life will be the best of your life. Mm-hmm. And you have to believe that. And I think that's what's so important now in my life is that anybody listening to this right now, please, we all go through adversity. Man, I've been there. I've been down that dark path. And I can only say this, and I promise you, don't give up. It will get better. You know, after every storm, the sun will eventually shine. It will eventually shine.
Well, thank you, Mark, for those words. I'm sure that's going to resonate with a lot of people. I know your time is short, so I'm going to wrap up with just a couple more questions. You are addressing, on one side, the people who are receiving end of bullying. Now, I am just disgusted and blown away at, you know, some of the videos that cross the Facebook feeds and the YouTube on children and grown-ups that are being bullied, that are being attacked, and someone's just standing there recording it, other people are cheering it on. What do you think makes a bully? Because I mean, I can't think in my wildest dreams of me ever being anyone other than the person throwing myself in between, even if, you know, heaven forbid something bad happened to me, that's another human being attacked, and you know, they could die at the end of it. So what are you seeing the other side of how maybe these kids are being raised or educated to become these negative, you know, bullies?
You know, that's a great question. And more important, you know, we just had this election, and more important than who's in the White House, it's who's in our house. What are our parents doing? What are we teaching our kids? What is social media showing? You know, I mean, we look today, what are our role models? The housewives of Orange County? You see parents and adults acting like fools? You know, the way they swear and scream and fight each other, and that's cool? How are we raising this next generation? You know, it takes some really strong people to say, that's wrong. That's not how you treat people. You know, bullies are really insecure people. They get their joy out of other people laughing or you know, are jumping on their bandwagon on how they treat someone or a power struggle that they need to be powerful because they're stronger than this other person. They can take advantage of that person. That's a really insecure person. And it's really sad because one thing I notice about, and a lot of times we parents bring their kids over here and I meet with parents and their kids. And one thing I realize about bullies is they've often been bullied or hurt in their life. And they find someone a little weaker than them or someone that they could pick on that maybe isn't fighting back. And it's like, you know, it's a way of getting even with someone that they couldn't fight back against. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes bullies are very insecure people and they often end up sitting here in my office crying and saying how sorry they are because they don't often realize what words or actions can do to another person because you never know what someone else is going through in their life. Maybe their parents are going through divorce. Maybe there's been a death in their family. Maybe they going a medical issue that we know nothing about, or they lost their pet or something that they're so traumatized by. And all of a sudden they hear, you're ugly, you're stupid, you're worthless. And then that becomes a moment in their life. They're like, I don't even want to be here no more. Again, when we talk about that moment, that if you could take it back, and that becomes the moment that they may end their life all because of words. And we're seeing this more and more, but, I often tell students, man, if you're sitting around watching a kid bully, you're just as guilty. Man, stand up and just say, hey, come on, leave them alone. They're my friend. You know how much that would mean to that person? You know, they may remember that the rest of their life. They may become, you know, old and gray, and they'll remember the day that someone said, hey, leave them alone. They're my friend. Because no one else was sticking up for that person, you know? Or seeing these kids that eat alone at lunch or because their lifestyle is different than somebody else's or their different color or whatever it would be. It just breaks my heart because one thing that love is the greatest gift that God's ever given us. And when you love on someone and you make them feel special, and that's what when I go to these schools, man, those are the kids I gravitate to, kids that maybe are a little different than the kids that maybe have a march their own drum beat or whatever it would be, you know, I applaud those kids, man. And I just want them to know that, you know, if they're listening to this podcast, that they are loved and they're special and they're meaningful and they're just so needed in this world. And don't ever give up. Don't ever, ever give up.
Yeah, I agree completely. There's one word that I use to raise my son, and that's kindness. And that resonates with every area. I mean, I point out, even when we're driving, you know, if someone's riding your ass in a car, are they being kind? No, because if we have to slam on our brakes, they're going to kill whoever's in the back seat. You know, I mean, every area. But being kind feels so good. Being a bully can't feel good. As soon as you walk away and those kids stop cheering or stop laughing. And, you know, I think I train him to be the one that steps up. And luckily he does jiu-jitsu as well, because he needs to have some skills. So he's
good for him.
But yeah, I mean, you need to be the wolf, not the sheep. And I don't mean a wolf in a negative way, but you need to separate yourself from the flock. And if all the kids are jeering, you might be the one, like you said, to turn the flock. And now the bully's isolated, and you know, and you've sent a positive message instead of a negative one. But I think you're right. Social media is, I'm sure it's a small percentage of human beings, but just like the news, you get the false impression that most people are like that. That if you see a school fight, you should all get your cell phone out and laugh and jeer and put it on, instead of, you know, stepping up and being, you know, the one with real courage and separate it and tell the person that's not right.
I can't agree. There's no greater joy than helping someone else. And that's what I found in my life and what I do. I love helping these kids, and especially kids that are going through adversity or being bullied or abused in some way. Those are the kids that, man, I live to help those kids. And I want to encourage other kids to stand up and realize that their joy in their life is going to be helping someone else.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And I hope that platform will be, you know, accepted no matter what their age.
Amen.
You know, all right, so to wrap up then, so where can people find your work? How can they book you
for man, just go to our website, which is thinkpoz.org, thinkpoz.org. And you can always find me on Facebook under Mark. Mark is with a C, M-A-R-C-M-E-R-O. And I have my own Facebook page, Mark Merrill Page.
All right, well, thank you so much for your time. I'm sure it's going to resonate with the grown-ups and certainly with every parent out there, you know, keeping an eye on their kids and their kids' friends and everyone else that they interact with.
And a special shout out to the first responders, man. This world would be empty without you guys. You know, sometimes I see some of our police officers or first responders, whoever, painted with one brush. And I got to tell you something, man. You have no idea what this world would be like without you guys. And I cannot thank you enough for your efforts, your tireless efforts to save lives, not only in my community, but all over the United States. Thank you, guys. And I love you.
All right. Thank you so much, Mark. We appreciate your time, and good luck with your 2017.
Thank you.